There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, and away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. A couple hours of live local talk. And, of course, you're a big part of the show when you interact at 343-0106, the text line, the phone line. And we're keeping our eyes on the Mobile City Council meeting going on right now. The vote to allow the vote for those 13,000 that want to annex into the city of Mobile. Keep you up to date on that and get you some audio coming up as former mayors Dow and Jones have both spoken in front of the council this morning. So that's coming up on today's show. Plus, we'll do more on our continuing to get to know the candidates segment, getting ready for the AL1 Republican debate that's happening on Thursday night. I'm moderating along with Peter Albrecht. That's live from the J.C. Davis Auditorium on Thursday night starting at 6, and of course live here at FM Talk 106.5. All right, this is going to be very interesting for me, and this is a person I've wanted to have on the show for a long time, and it's great that we got it done. Robert McGee, Chief Governmental Affairs and Public Relations Officer with the Porch Band of Creek Indians, joining us now to talk about a whole bunch. First of all, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
And I want to get into, obviously, the news story right now and the discussion of what is being offered to the state of Alabama when it comes to money back to the state and in return for rights of exclusivity and different gaming for the tribe. But I want to kind of set up a backstory here, Robert. I've talked about it a few times, but I will defer to somebody who knows this way more than I. Can you explain to my listeners about sovereign land, tribal land, and how that works in the state of Alabama, or maybe how it works nationally?
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, when we talk about, you hear us mention time, you know, many times we've talked about our trust lands. And what that means is this lands that we have here within the state of Alabama that are held in trust by the federal government. And like, national parks and things like that, those lands are exempt from taxes. However, you know, one of the things that what we're allowed to do on that land, as long as it was taken into trust prior to 1988 through a federal law, was the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. And so what that Act did was it allowed tribes across the United States to provide the necessary revenues that they needed to help with their health care, social services, education, utilities like fire, law enforcement, court systems, because the federal government wasn't able to, you know, there's various treaty rights and things like that. They're supposed to provide funds to help run those type of governmental services. Well, since they weren't able to, you know, uphold that end, they decided that, okay, you know, tribes are doing gaming here in the United States. They passed a federal law called the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, and it says that you're allowed to do under federal law what is allowed under state law within the state of Alabama. So we'll say our state of Alabama. And so that's why the tribe is allowed to operate its three gaming facilities that we currently have on trust land, and be able to take that revenue that we received from that and then put it back into our health care, our educational system, our fire departments, our law enforcement department, court systems. So technically, since the state and the federal government is not providing that, we're providing that to ourselves. And if we were taxed, it would be different. If we were taxed, then of course the state would have to provide all those things. And so that they do not provide that here on our trust land and in the reservation area.
All right. Okay. So, Robert, this is so what it is based on the state that those trust lands are inside. So, a tribe in another state that had different laws, had other gambling going on or whatever, their reality inside that trust land would be different from the Porch Bandit Creek Indians here in Alabama.
Exactly, yes. Like, say, so you have the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians. They're in Mississippi where gaming, full-fledged gaming is legal, and they're allowed to do that on their land.
Okay, so with Alabama being, you know, we have very limited, and we can get into that, gaming here in the state. But the push last session was for a lottery bill. Heck, it was a Republican bill. Think about what a difference 20 years has made. A Republican bill in the House, a Republican bill in the Senate, to push for a change to the Alabama Constitution to allow the lottery. Now, I know y'all with the Porch Bandit Creek Indians had expressed some concerns with that last session, and then I want to talk about what was happening last session and then kind of get into what you're offering this year. So what were your concerns last time?
Well, last year it was so there was two lottery bills that were out there. There was one bill that actually had a traditional had a lottery, but it also allowed video lottery terminals, which under federal law that's considered class three games. And so we were not supportive of that. What we were supportive of was a clean traditional lottery that was introduced by Senator Albright, meaning a traditional paper lottery that exists in the surrounding states around us. And so that's the difference from the two bills that were introduced last year. We've always been supportive of, you know, your traditional lottery, your paper lottery. You go buy the tickets. I mean, we live here in South Alabama. We can go right over to Florida and do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were in support of. Unfortunately, what they did was they introduced a bill that allowed the tracks to also have these VLT machines, video lottery terminals. And we're not talking about terminals that dispense lottery tickets. We're actually talking about slot machines under federal definition.
Now, if something is on one of these off-track facilities, these track, if something's legal there, does it, like in another state, like we just talked about in Mississippi, because full gaming's legal, then on tribal lands, it could be as well. If something is legal at one of these off-track facilities, does that change the definition for you on tribal lands?
It would change the definition for us on tribal lands, but unfortunately we would still have to go through the state of Alabama to negotiate a compact. Because the only way that we can have those games, you know, when it comes to the Class 3 games, is through a compact. Class 2 games, which being our bingo machines that we currently operate, we don't need that. But if it did change to the Class 3 system, then yes, we would have to have a compact through the agreement with the state, of course, and then it has to go to the federal government for approval. And I guess that's maybe one of the things that people get, they, you know, oh, the tribe doesn't pay taxes and things like that. Well, we pay hundreds of millions of dollars in payroll taxes and things like that that are reinvested into the state of Alabama. But in order for us to provide a fee, a payment in lieu of taxes to the state, then we would have to have a compact, and then you would have to give us something to get something.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we say that, we're talking about, okay, let's give us full-blown, you know, gaming, blackjack, other table games, craps, and things like that that you see in Mississippi. And if you give us that, then we will give you something in return to the state off of those machines, a payment in lieu of the taxes.
So, Robert, if you get Class 3 gaming, and I may use the wrong terms here, correct me, if you get Class 3 gaming on tribal land, but we go back to that first thing, you can do whatever is legal in the state that you're inside, does that mean then Class 3 gaming is legal outside tribal lands, or how does that work?
No, because that's what you would do within the compact within itself. Okay, you would limit that stuff within the compact with the state. And say, okay, if you're going to give us this, meaning this unlimited gaming, let's just say that, then we will pay a payment to the state. Now, keep in mind, if you made it legal for other operators, then you're no longer giving us something exclusive. So why are we providing income to you?
Right. Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. So in the compact, the state itself, Alabama, can say, hey, there's no Class 3 gaming in Alabama, in the state of Alabama, but on tribal lands, sovereign lands inside, it is legal. That doesn't, it doesn't work the other way. Just because it would be legal then on tribal lands, it doesn't make it legal outside the tribal lands.
You're right. Yes, sir.
Okay, so this offer here, kind of run through what the tribe is offering the state of Alabama. Kind of like, give me a list of things here.
Well, we look at it, you know, as you've seen on TV and various ads and things like that, it's just the billion-dollar plan for Alabama. I mean, many times we hear every year gaming comes up, and gaming is, you know, it's challenged, it's nothing happens and such. And we said, okay, you know what, it's time for the tribe. We can put, you know, we'll put the best plan forward. We'd never see anybody else offering up something good for the state of Alabama. And so what we were talking about there is, you know, our three facilities here in the state, those were investments of over $200+ million each that we made in the building, and, you know, in building and construction of those. They're destination resort sites. So we said, okay, if you're going to have gaming in the state of Alabama, you want them to be destination resort sites. Let's look at the possibility of having, in order for us to give the bank, the, you know, provide the most revenue to the state of Alabama, let's look at the possibility of opening two additional sites, you know, in the northern area, and we can put forth a license fee. Because a lot of times in other states and things like that, when you have gaming that comes in, these license fees are very expensive and for sale. And so we were looking at, you know, $200 to $300 million a payment directly to the state just for the license to have those two additional sites. And then look at, okay, now what's a fair tax revenue for gaming within, you know, what's the fair tax revenue for those? And so we were looking at, you know, 25%. We were looking at, you know, building, like we said, destination-style resorts that, you know, the state of Alabama can be proud of, that would, you know, bring in, hopefully, you know, nearly $350+ million in annual taxes after that.
Wow.
That is not, no one's proposed that here in the state. You see what I'm saying? I mean, you hear, oh, well, we want to have gaming at these tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what have they proposed? I mean, are they putting forth the license fee? Why should they automatically, you know, get something without paying for it, like you have in other states? And so what we offered up is, you know what, we're willing to do that. So many people are caught up on the exclusivity issue and things like that. No,
right.
We're talking about $1 billion for the state of Alabama. We're talking about, you know, we're paying for this, $300 million or, you know, $200 million for these license fees, 25% tax, you know, that allow us to change the state of Alabama and that allow us to bring in additional revenue every year after that.
Hey, explain the part with the two new facilities, the North Alabama facilities. How does that work? Because this goes back to maybe some of my original questions for you.
Exactly.
To
yes,
operate,
sir.
Does that, do you, yeah. are there tribal holdings there now, sovereign properties, or can you convert into sovereign? How does that work, Robert?
No, we're not talking about trust land. We are actually just talking about a commercial business. Okay, those would be two commercial sites, and that's why we're saying that we'd be able to offer that 25% tax.
Okay, that's your asking the state.
A constitutional amendment.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, so that would be basically, hey, state, we want to operate these facilities in the state of Alabama. This is not in our sovereign or trust land. This is in the state of Alabama, and here's the deal to operate those.
Yep, exactly.
All right, can you hold on? We're going to run to the news break and come right back.
Yeah.
All right. Coming right back, Robert McGee with the Porch Band of Creek Indians. And I got a lot of text and questions here, too. We'll try to get those answered when we get back. So instead of like we had the question the other day, those two facilities in North Alabama, they're in the state of Alabama. They don't become trust land. All right. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with Robert McGee with the Porch Band of Creek Indians and Chief Governmental Affairs and Public Relations Officer for the tribe. And talking about this proposal here. And Robert, once again, it's the number $350 million. What does the $350 million represent?
Well, the $350 million would be the tax that we're talking about. So it would be the 25%, you know, if it's 25% or something like that tax off of those two facilities. But then it would also be a payment that we could provide off of our current three sites.
Okay.
Payment in lieu of taxes I was talking about before.
And people, this is good to understand. Those two facilities proposed in North Alabama would have they're a different thing because they're not on trust land.
They're not on trust land. They're commercial businesses like the one we purchased in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because y'all made some headlines here. I mean, that facility up there, isn't that near Allentown? Somewhere in there? Mm-hmm. How does that work? How do y'all find a place, you know, so many states away, you know, a third of the country away to go buy a facility?
I think just one of the things that the tribe's always done is we try to do our best to just diversify our economy. And like any other business in the state of Alabama, there's many business owners here in the state of Alabama that have businesses outside of the state of Alabama. The trouble that, you know, people were saying, oh, they're spending this money. Well, no, that was an asset purchase. And think about that, you know, that revenue comes back into the state of Alabama. You know, so back to the Portsmouth Creek Indians and such here. And that, you know, those type of opportunities allow us to just continue to diversify. What many people don't, you know about the tribe, we have 20 businesses here in the state of Alabama. You know, hotels and condominiums and service stations and restaurants, and there's OWA, the place in Foley. You know, there's so many, you know, businesses that we have, and it's because of what we've been able to do with gaming and allowing us to diversify to bring it back here to the state of Alabama. But it was just an asset purchase, and so think about the ones here in the state of Alabama that we're looking at would be two commercial, you know, facilities that will be licensed and regulated by the state of Alabama. So our three facilities here on our trust lands is regulated by the federal government, meaning by the National Gaming Commission. What we're asking for, and that's the problem that has occurred in the state of Alabama, you do not have a regulatory body that is overseeing, you know, gaming,
right,
especially at those tracks that are operating illegal games. And so we're calling for, also within our, you know, our plan is, hey, you need a state regulatory authority that can regulate our gaming, those two gaming sites, and then that will have the 25% tax, and that can go back to the state.
Robert, and you said something earlier that is lined up with several of the texts that have come in here, and you mentioned OWA, and of course down, you know, Mobile and Baldwin counties, people are talking about that a lot. Would OWA become, would you have gaming there? Is there any plan for that long term, or how would that work?
No, there hasn't been that, because, you know, the way this is, you know, we've always talked about this in the past, that we can only do gaming if it's on trust land. So right now, nothing could happen to anywhere within the state of Alabama if the law did not change, because we operate currently our three facilities on trust land held in trust by the federal government. OWA was it's another commercial entity. That land is, you know, we bought outright. It's not held in trust by the federal government.
Right. So this is just the same when people forever have said on this show, when I mentioned the Gulf Quest Museum, they said, get the Portsmouth Creek Indians to buy it and put a facility there. But that's not trust land. It could be something, if something like that happened one day, it would be more like this proposal now to the state, right?
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So, and y'all have, I mean, I guess with the number of facilities running, that those numbers, I mean, that you're projecting here for what your revenue, I mean, because you got to make the revenue to have that amount of tax come back to the state. You feel pretty solid on those numbers?
Yes, sir. Yep. Well, I mean, that's one of the things that the tribe has done successfully, I think, is we make sure that we research what the market is, what the market can sustain. And then we have many people that look into those numbers and to come back with us and saying, you know what, this is where the possible best location is. This would bring the most revenue to the state of Alabama.
Yeah, I got a couple questions here just on how things work, because I am very interested. Robert, like when the money comes back from the facilities that exist now or, you know, in the future, if this deal works out with the state, is there a distribution to members of the tribe, or how does that work?
We have scholarships that are set up for all the our tribal members, educational scholarships, and also for Indian descent membership. They do have a general welfare benefit that's received under a current tax law. Health care that is provided. We have death policies, burial policies, and such. And so, and then the rest of it goes into our health facility here. All those other, you know, it takes us, it's about $22 million just to run our health department itself.
Really?
And so We have a lot of those governmental services that we provide to the membership here, and also to this, a lot of the protection, fire protection, law enforcement protection is provided to everybody who lives, you know, within this area. And so not necessarily, you know, being tribal themselves, but they're protected.
So I mean, this money basically goes like a tax base would in some other place to provide
exactly
infrastructure, yes, public service, public safety, all those kind of things.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Those, and that's outlined in federal law.
I have just a minute left, although I'm tempted to have to hold you over, because I want to know, you got powwow coming up. Talk about this. I have never been. I want to take the family and go. Tell me about it.
Oh, yeah. It's a great time. It occurs on the Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, and it also on Friday. We have about 15,000 people that come here to the reservation for those 2 days to see Native American dancing from the southeast, and then, of course, the competition dancing, which is you'll see hundreds and hundreds of dancers dressed in regalia competing against each other, fancy dance, shawl dance, meaning women and children. I think it's ages from peewee all the way up to over the age of 55. We'll have several drum groups here from all across the U.S. who then will also compete on drums and traditional songs and things like that. We have over 100 plus vendors that are here selling Native American arts and crafts. It's just it's a great opportunity, I think, to do something different than your traditional Thanksgiving. And we love families that, you know, get to come out and just see, you know, what the, you know, just to see what the just Native Americans and the impact they've had on the United States and, of course, Alabama.
I really want to come to see so much of it. The dancing, I've watched more YouTube videos of the dancing than I have of any other kind of dancing. I'm fascinated by it. So hopefully we'll see you up there. Robert, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having us. I'm glad we were able to, you know, talk to you about the billion-dollar plan for Alabama.
All right. And I know I'm going to get you back here because we're going to be talking about this as we get closer to session in Montgomery. Is that a deal?
Yes, that's a deal.
All right. Robert McGee, Chief Governmental Affairs and Public Relations Officer at the Porch Band of Creek Indians. And we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35, FM Talk 106.5, and Midday Mobile. Big thank you to Robert McGee with the Porch Band of Creek Indians. We're going to get him back on over the next couple months to get their take from the tribe's perspective on this compact offer. We'll go right back into this discussion in session this coming year. And what will be the... this is part of the lotto bill. This is part of revenue for the state. This is part of what Senate President Pro Tem Del Mar said was... He's calling it a monopoly for gaming. I offer this just a subject for discussion. And I hear what Del Mar says. Hopefully we'll get him on the show soon. Because if you sign this compact with the Porch Band of Creek Indians, they would be the only ones running Class 3 gaming in the state. But can I ask this? I think this is a fair question. Do y'all believe that anytime soon the legislature of the state of Alabama is going to legalize Class 3 gaming for the entire state? Seriously. Look at the lottery. Look at the stinking lottery thing. And I don't care. If it passes, it doesn't pass. I don't care. I think people need the right to vote on it. Not scared of it either way. But Class 3 gaming, of course, a different thing, right? Like, I've often said the lottery is the wine spritzer of the gambling world. And they can't even get their minds made up on that. Now, a lot of it is about who gets the revenue from this. What, you know, does it go to the ETF, goes to the general fund? But do you think anytime soon, really, that the state of Alabama, that the House and the Senate are going to line up to vote for Class 3 gaming? Because it's only a monopoly, right? If there's other people and private, and if there was private business had opportunity to get in it, I mean, you hear me rail on the ABC. I want the state out of it. I want private businesses to be able to compete. But if the state's not going to change the law to make that happen, then is it truly a monopoly if you can't operate a Class 3 facility yourself or some other entity? So, I think that's a fair question in it. All right, I had planned to go back and get the audio of former Mayor Mike Jones and former Mayor Mike Dow and former Mayor Sam Jones speaking pro and con against annexation, but they still have yet to do the full vote. So I think we're just going to go straight to the audio. And bear with me, this is not my audio. It's what's fed by the city council's YouTube feed. But we're going to go to it because I think they're getting ready to vote.
Community, no matter how that conversation started or why they came to us in the first place or when exactly happened, yes, they want EMS. Yes, they certainly do. But they already get full police and full fire patrols. It's just they don't pay the same of taxes to get these services. But they are asking to come in and pay full freight. They're not asking to pay half the freight. They're asking to pay full freight. And I think that's important. They're not going to require a bond issue. They're not going to require us to come in and make all of these repairs like we've had to do in the past. And I think that's important. They are move-in ready, basically, to move into the city. They're ready to go. And Bess and I, if all of these, if they're allowed to vote and if they are successful, Bess and I would probably wind up taking in most of those into our districts. You know, retail shopping areas nearby would, of course, also be part of this annexed area. That's the way it's drawn on in. So those revenues would help pay for the garbage and the trash. And then that money that is a net gain, would then go into our general fund. I'm not going to go into any of the debate about grants and that sort of thing. We've all heard plenty about that. But if the annexation effort fails, I really believe, and we've heard it from other folks, whether you believe it or not, but I really believe that that could result in the same neighborhoods who are very close to Sims being annexed into Sims. Why not? They're annexing as we speak. They have fire stations. They have city services. They're growing. They make no bones about the fact that they are trying to grow and they are taking in these neighborhoods. We're already landlocked on one side to the east. We're landlocked to the north. Pretty soon, we're probably going to be landlocked to the west if we don't do something to try to grow our city. I believe allowing the folks who live in these neighborhoods who have come to us the opportunity to vote is very important. It's fundamental. I don't agree with all of my colleagues here on the council about their opinions as to why we should oppose annexation. I don't agree with all the speakers we've heard. But I have to respect their positions, and I hope that they will respect mine. We've heard a lot about grow from within, grow from without, grow from within. I think that's a new little catchphrase. Still, it's true. We do need to grow from within. We need to stop the perception that Mobile is not a good place to live. We've got to have our folks in the chamber, in the realtors, Downtown Alliance, all of you all who live here and work in companies and whatnot. If money is coming in here and expanding, we don't need to have your employees who are already living in Mobile tell these folks who are coming and say, oh no, you don't want to live in Mobile. You want to live in Baldwin County, or you want to live out in the out county. You don't want to live in Mobile. Sometimes we are our own worst enemies. That has to stop. That will help keep people in the city of Mobile. That and making sure we have housing stock available for people to live. A woman who used to live in my neighborhood emailed me, said she had to move into the county because A, she wanted to be close to Providence Hospital because she was taking care of her elderly parents, needed a house, couldn't find one she could afford that was close and would serve all of her needs. So she moved right outside into the county, and now she's one of the folks who wants to come back into the city. She didn't want to leave the city, but she felt like she didn't have another option.
All right. That's a little bit of what has been going on at the Mobile City Council meeting. We're now getting some updates here because a little bit of a delay in that. And Dalton, you want to give me an update there, but it looks like it is a no vote for the annexation vote. A no vote for the annexation vote. Remember, so you remember what was going on here. It wasn't even that the members of the city council were going to vote to let in these 13,000 people. They were going to give them the right to vote whether to come in or not. You had Councilman Richardson and Small already on the record saying no. You had four yes votes. It was down to Council President LaVon Manzi, who said...
Yeah, Manzi spoke just about 12, 13 minutes ago, and following along on the tweets from our friend, John Sharp from AL.com, he tweeted, Manzi, who was then speaking, now the swing vote on annexation. He said, this is a place where I wanted to be since I was 12 years old. I took this responsibility knowing this day would come, and sure enough, it has arrived. And then John Sharp says, Manzi is leaning on a no vote, says he's leaning on what he's hearing in his district. He said, this isn't an initiative I'm going to support. And sure enough, 2 minutes later, after the vote, John Sharp tweets, Mobile will not be hosting a special election on annexation. The no vote goes 4-3, because of course they needed 5 for approval. So the no vote gets 3 votes, and that's enough to keep those areas from voting on annexation.
There you go. So the supermajority.
That's right.
The supermajority. So it would have passed. The majority of representatives said they would like the folks to be able to vote.
4 yeses, 3 noes, needed 5 yeses.
For a supermajority.
Right. And
so the supermajority. What about this? Supermajority, that's part of the Zogby Act, part of our system of government. Supermajority. Do you look now? Did the supermajority have its place early on? Absolutely. Making sure minority voices were heard? Absolutely. Is that true today? Is the supermajority something that we've got to have? I mean, is the supermajority, okay, in the last 10 years, in the last 15 years, has the supermajority benefited the city of Mobile, having a supermajority vote? Is it protected Mobile? Has it made Mobile better? Or has it been to the detriment? I want to hear from you on that.
So the yeses break down. Yes, Bess Rich. Yes, Joel Daves. Yes, Gene and Gregory. Yes,
yeah, they were
John
already
Williams.
On record. It was up to LeVon
right.
Manzi.
No C.J. Small. No Fred Richardson. No LeVon Manzi.
So LeVon Manzi, council president, voting no. All right. I'm going to grab a call here. David is checking in with us. David, of course, I was watching your tweets, too. You were at the council meeting. What's the tenor of the audience there when the vote went down?
I mean, it was very quiet. There was no applause or boos or celebrations or anything like that. It was very respectful because everybody got to say their piece on the council, and there were three members of the community that spoke in favor of it, and 3 that voted that spoke against it, and then of course former mayors Brown, Jones, and Dow got to speak as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we did learn what C.J. Small's price is to vote in favor of annexation with his comments.
What was
and
it?
That is $20 million for District 3. If the city of Mobile was to cut a check with District 3's name on it for $20 million, he would have voted in favor of annexation to cover infrastructure needs that he says are desperately needed in his district.
So for $20 million, he would change what now he says is the wrong move for Mobile.
Yes, and he said that.
But would it be the wrong move then?
The reason
or would
he voted against the Darby Creek annexation as well is because he feels that we need to address these issues that we're addressing. One of the issues that I haven't heard about before, but has now surfaced, is affordable housing and the fact that the Mobile Housing Board is now going in and demolishing their housing communities, and they're not rebuilding these communities to keep the affordable housing stock at the same level that they say is needed to keep people in the city. Because one of the things they're saying is the reason why the city is losing population is we're demolishing these communities and then giving the people that used to live in these communities Section 8 vouchers to go move out in the county. Or
why wouldn't I heard that earlier listening to some of this. Let's talk about that for a second. Why is giving somebody, I mean, they're getting assistance from the taxpayers, right, to subsidize their living. Why should they be upset with something that lets them move to an area and find a house in a place they want to be with Section 8? Why is that? Why all of a sudden is Section 8 housing and the taxpayer subsidization of another citizen's rent, why is that a bad thing?
Well, they would the people that voted that are opposed to this annexation would say that the people that are getting these vouchers don't want to leave their communities that they are moving from, but that they're being forced to because
people that are forced to leave a project. Okay, I just say what nobody will say down there. So people that are they're forced to leave a housing project and go live in another neighborhood.
Correct.
They're bothered. Bothered by that. You know what? I got flags all over the field, David, on that.
Those are the same flags I'm throwing as well.
All right. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the update. I appreciate that. And I'll come back. I got calls holding. We'll get to your phone calls. Another thing, too, this idea, and you heard Councilwoman Gina Gregory talk about it. There's truth there, too. This idea that we're going to build from within. We haven't been building from within. And whether we annex in a new neighborhood or not doesn't change whether we're going to build within. We talked about it this morning. Let's just talk about what the facts are. If somebody has a choice, now there are people, and I love what's happened with condo developments and high rises and downtown, and I think that's cool. But there are only so many people in our area they're going to choose that lifestyle. There's a lot of folks that want a, if they can, they can do it, they want a carport and they want a yard and they want a patio for the grill on that, you know, on that property. They want a house. So when they go choose a place, they're choosing, not saying, well, I just don't want to live in the city of Mobile. No, there's people going, there's not, here's a house that's more affordable, and I get grass and a patio and all those kind of things versus another. This idea that somehow magically you're going to force people to live in a lifestyle or just a style that they don't want to because we're going to grow up and not grow out is poppycock. And it has not happened in the past, and it's not going to all of a sudden, now that the three members of the city council voted against the right of referendum for the people there, that's not going to change. People aren't going to all of a sudden go, oh, well, then we ought to start living in, building high-rise condos and living there and changing what we want for our families. It's crap. All right, phone calls next. 343-0106. Plus, we get to know the candidates, a name you already know, Chris Pringle. He's a candidate for AL1 in the House. He joins us coming up right after 1 o'clock. Y'all stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. And go to the phones. George in Mobile is first up. Hey, George.
Hey, I called you several weeks back when this whole thing hit the street. And basically, I don't know if you remember, but I told you I was one out in West Mobile that was cut out of
I remember you.
Really didn't have a dog in the fight, I guess, other than to say that I'm actually not surprised that it didn't pass, and I'm actually kind of glad that it didn't pass because I'm hoping that maybe next time I can get in on the annexation.
Right, and you know, somebody said this morning, why don't we just open the annex up for the 70,000 people that are in the PJ? I'm not against that.
Well, but I will say, you know, when I called back, I don't remember, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, I did say that I went to the initial meeting downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And in sitting there, I remember saying, you know, you played the clip of Richardson going on this whole thing, dogs are the same, cats are the same, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I told you that I sat through, when you sat through the first 15, 20 minutes of questioning, it all came down along racial lines.
Yep.
And I knew that's the way the vote was going to go. And then when we had the initial outpour 2 weeks ago, where you had Small and Richardson come up and basically say no, and then they tabled it. To me, you had some fundamental flaws from the get-go. And for one thing, it was a lot of fuzzy math. You still there?
I'm here.
Yeah. I thought there was some fuzzy math in the first presentation. Just in how much it was going to bring in and the grants and everything else. But my question would have been at the time is if they really wanted to get the three members to vote yes, then why didn't they just say, okay, we're going to take in $2.2 million. I tell you what, we'll take $1.5 million, spend that on new police officers, and we'll give everybody's district $100,000 for whatever special project you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You want to fix up blighted houses, you want to fix sidewalks, you want to plant trees, whatever you want to do in your district. And at least that way, they could go back to their constituents and say, we're getting something for this.
I think,
you know, if they're listening to the people, I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep cutting you off, I'm just saying, if they're listening to the people in their districts, the people down in those districts are saying, why do I want them to come in? It's not improving my life.
Well, here's the thing. I've been using the numbers that come from the Stinson administration. You had former Mayor Sam Jones saying they're incorrect. Then somebody show me something. Let's get an independent contractor out there to give me. I do want truth in this, but I'm working off the numbers they said that are a net gainer to the city. And to me, as a resident of the city of Mobile, it's a net gain. The city is bigger. The city gets more money. Good. I mean, that's how I see it.
There's no doubt that it is a net gain of $2.2 million. I'm not worried about that math. I do think that it is a gain for the city. Like I said, whether you can generate all the revenue that they project or not, they've got to figure at $2.2 million. What the problem from where I sat in that meeting that day is that when they got up and they started saying, okay, well, we're going to hire like 15 new officers year 1, 2, and 3. It doesn't tell you what happens after year 3 when the city starts having to pay for those officers by themselves.
Well, that's a good question, and that's a fair question. But now it's just water in the bridge. George, good point. I want to take one last call here, and I appreciate your call, but got just a minute left, and our buddy Jeff Stone checking in from, West Mobile. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Good, man. So it fails.
It fails, but it all boils down to management of the money they're already generating. And as a business owner, here's my issue. I have to have a county business license along with a city business license because I'm in what's considered police jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the proposed annexed area. But when I renew my business license every year with the county, it's very, very affordable. When I renew with the city, they want 10% of my sales. And it doesn't matter if I made any money, lost money, it's the total sales. Well, what I sell is inherently expensive. So usually my business license is very, very expensive to renew. And here they are saying, oh, we get all the benefits for free. That's not true.
They get it for half price.
We're renewing our business license, which is a lot of money every year. And yes, we get the services of the police and the fire and all that, but we're paying for it by renewing our business license.
But at the same time, people say right now, for people that are not a business owner, that you're getting these protections, and you as former law enforcement know what it is. You're getting these protections, but you're paying half price in the tax.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just calling in as a giving my perspective as a business owner. And I could see that too. But I think it has to be more refined, and they need to hammer out the edges and fine-tune it if it ever comes back on the table.
There we go. Jeff, appreciate the call. We got to jump. We got the news break coming up. And then when we return, a candidate for AL1, he will be one of those debating on Thursday night at the J.C. Davis Auditorium. And it's a name you know, Chris Pringle. He's going to join us next. Y'all stay close.